Today on Annenberg Radio News.
Now, it forces a lot of employers to pay for things that they really don't believe in, whether it's ethically, morally, or just financially. They don't think that they should be paying for it.
We hear what young people in Los Angeles have to say about the Affordable Care Act. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News. For Thursday, October 3rd, 2013, I am Ryan Bouzion. The debate over how to end the government shutdown was interrupted earlier today when shots were fired outside of the Capitol building. Police shot and killed a woman driver after she tried to ram her car into a security barrier outside the White House. She led police on a 1.5-mile chase toward the Capitol building. A Secret Service officer was injured during the chase. Police shot at her in the car as she got close to Capitol Hill. It turns out that she had a young child in the car, but thankfully, police say the child was not hurt. And we're in the middle of the third day of the government shutdown, and there is no end in sight. Logan Healy has more on which federal agencies are being affected and what that means for you.
800,000 government employees are without a job again today. According to one estimate, the shutdown is costing the U.S. economy as much as $300 million per day. Yesterday, about 450 guests at the Reagan Presidential Library Air Force One Pavilion were allowed in free because the pavilion and other exhibits are run by the Reagan Foundation.
And it will remain free until the government shutdown ends.
The Nixon Presidential Library was not so lucky and is closed to the public. I tried calling federal airline safety representatives, but found out they had been sent home. The Border Patrol remains operational, though their public information officer was furloughed. Same for the Edwards Air Force Base, where most of the 8,500 civilian employees were told to stay home.
I've been furloughed due to lapse of appropriations until further notice.
And don't worry about those pesky tax audits. The IRS is closed today, too.
Due to the current budget situation, all IRS offices are closed.
Officials said it's business as usual at the VA hospital and for veterans receiving benefits. For those applying for or receiving federal student aid, there is expected to be limited impact. President Obama said Congress could reopen the government in 5 minutes if the Republican-controlled House would pass a clean budget bill. Congressional Republicans have sent budget bills to the Senate, but each time included language to defund or delay the Affordable Care Act, better known as Obamacare. While Congress works on a deal, federal services in Southern California face plenty of uncertainty. Logan Healy, Annenberg Radio News.
The U.S. Treasury Department says the economy would plunge into a downturn if the federal government defaults on their loans. The department released a report that concludes the effects of a government loan default would be worse than the Great Recession of 2008. Treasury officials hope to pressure Congress by laying out potential consequences to financial markets. Congress has until October 17th to avoid that debt default. One of the key factors for Obamacare's success is how many of the 19 million uninsured people under the age of 30 will sign up. Danielle Tarasuk talks to students about whether they will sign up.
A lot of people can rely on their parents until age 26 for health insurance, but Jose Garcia, 21 years old, can't. He was in foster care his entire life and was covered, but now he's aged out.
I will be applying for Obamacare yet this week as soon as possible.
Hannah Shai is from the USC chapter of CalPERC. She's part of an effort to educate young people about their options.
You go up to an average student randomly and, you know, you ask, are you covered under health care? Do you have a health care plan? And more often than not, someone will say, I don't know. And so that's really the reality of it. The reality is that people don't know. So education and awareness, I think, is key.
But not everyone agrees that Obamacare is right for young people. Saro, a junior at USC who did not give his last name, thinks that even though the government's intentions were good, Obamacare falls short.
Just one of the examples on why this bill is such a disaster and it didn't meet the goals is that now it forces a lot of employers to pay for things that they really don't believe in, whether it's ethically, morally, or just financially. They don't think that they should be paying for it.
Campaigns such as Opt Out, which is funded by the billionaire Koch brothers, are targeting young people on college campuses with a very clear message. Obamacare is the wrong care. Opt Out has created a series of videos. In one video, a young woman is lying down on a gynecological examination table with her knees spread apart. When her doctor leaves the room, a creepy Uncle Sam pops up between her legs and she screams. It's a comic take on Obamacare for conservatives, but a serious issue for many young people like Jose Garcia, for whom opting out is not an option. Danielle Teresiuk, Annenberg Radio News.
The former city manager and alleged mastermind behind the Bell corruption scandal pled no contest today to 69 counts of municipal corruption. Robert Rizzo was charged with stealing more than $5 million in public funds. He's expected to receive a minimum of 10 years in state prison at sentencing in March. Five former Bell officials have already been convicted. Trial for Rizzo's co-defendant, former assistant city manager Angela Spezia, is scheduled to begin Monday. Governor Jerry Brown signed a bill today that's been 20 years in the making. Activists and labor unions believe that the new immigrant license bill is only a stepping stone toward greater immigration reform. Grace Lim was at City Hall to witness the signing. She reports on what happens next.
Today the license, tomorrow the reform. That's what 100 supporters of AB 60 were chanting in front of City Hall today. The law allows undocumented immigrants to apply for driver's licenses starting in January 2015. As Governor Brown signed the bill, he called for the nation to follow California's example.
Washington, listen. We, the people of California, have redefined what it is to be an American.
Currently, if undocumented immigrants get pulled over, they can be fined or have their cars impounded. Jessica Yamilee Pardillo says the bill signed for the governor is a relief for her family.
My mom is unlicensed. She has an expired license, and she's actually been fined for not having a driver's license at a checkpoint.
Pardillo is a student activist. Some of her family and friends are among the 2.5 million undocumented immigrants living in California who will be affected by this law. LA Mayor Eric Garcetti is also one of the law supporters.
It will make our streets safer by ensuring that undocumented residents are properly trained, must pass a driving test, and get insurance to drive a car.
California is not the first state to pass an immigrant license law. It follows Colorado and Oregon. Councilmember Gilberto Cedillo authored the bill when he was a state lawmaker. He believes California's laws can influence the rest of the country.
California frequently leads in major policy areas. We've done so many times in the environment. We're doing so in immigration.
Republican Assemblyman Kurt Hagman of Chino Hills is against AB 60. He wrote an opinion piece that said passing more measures like this will encourage more illegal immigration, not less. He argues this bill sends the wrong message that there are few consequences in ignoring immigration laws. But supporters hope this law will help bring further national changes to immigration law. Grace Lim, Annenberg Radio News.
A jury sentenced 48-year-old Ronald Earl Brim to death today for his part in a deadly gang shooting. Brim was found guilty of opening fire at a Metro Blue Line station in Compton during a gang dispute in July 2012. He killed two people. Three other people were injured. Brim was convicted for the shooting, along with co-defendants Leo Lloyd Adams and Richard Roberson. Adams is expected to be sentenced later today and faces the possibility of life in prison without parole. Roberson, the third defendant in the shooting, is awaiting trial. Census figures show that California incarcerates more young people than any other state in the nation. Low-income youth and people of color are disproportionately affected by what some call the school-to-prison pipeline. The Youth Justice Coalition is hosting a series of events to promote alternatives to pushing kids out of school. Stephanie Monti has the story from Chuco's Justice Center in Inglewood.
At the corner of Redondo and West Boulevards in Inglewood, Chuco's Justice Center is painted with happy kids holding posters promoting justice, peace, and preparation for college, not prison. Chuco's led a presentation to local officials about the need for safety in schools. Tanisha Dennard was born and raised in South Central Los Angeles. She graduated from Chuco School and is now an organizer there.
In my experience working here and being in school here, it's a big difference between how it is in regular public LAUSD schools. I mean, the class sizes are really smaller, and then you learn more things that are inherent to, like, your life or whatever. Like, the history that we learn is, like, street universities.
Today's event is a part of National Week of Action on School Pushout. Its goal is to teach young people about their human rights and reduce the number of kids going to prison. They are also promoting a campaign to gain 1% of law enforcement's budget to build more educational centers like Chuco's. More than 90 students from ages 16 to 24 are enrolled in Chuco's program. Each student is provided a free bus pass, cooked lunch, and a daycare room for those who have kids. Most of the students involved with the Youth Justice Center have spent time at either juvenile hall, probation camp, county jail, or even state prison. English teacher Dipti Baranwal explains what led to the school push-out campaign.
I think it has to do with years of neglect of these communities, years of under-resourcing, lack of jobs, over-policing of communities. That's why we end up with schools where huge numbers of students have been pushed out and have no place to go, so they come to a school like ours.
Chuco's Justice Center makes street art a vital part of its program. The two-story building is decorated with graffiti of cartoon characters and political figures. There's even a space called the Graph Lab, where students can perfect their artistic flair. Avelino Valencia was there to represent Assemblyman Stephen Bradford of the 62nd District. He thinks there are enough resources in the area.
Obviously that there is help, you know, it's just a matter of bridging the gap of the help that's out there and the people that need it.
The YJC is a part of the national campaign called Dignity in Schools, which is devoted to promoting healthier education environments. Stephanie Monti, Annenberg Radio News.
LA Unified School District Superintendent John Daisy will appear on television tonight to answer the public's questions about technology in the classroom. Under the new Common Core standards, LAUSD is spending $1 billion to give iPads to students. Several schools confiscated their students' iPads after they found ways to hack the tablet's web filter and access unauthorized websites. The broadcast, set to air at 6 tonight on public station KLCS, will allow the public to call or email in their questions. Sweater season is nearly upon us. Tomorrow we'll get up to around 90 degrees, but temperatures are expected to cool through the weekend with highs in the mid-80s. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we hear how Buse and Beethoven blend more than you think. For years now, research has been trying to get to the message out, that antibiotics don't work for most sore throats and bronchitis. But that hasn't stopped doctors from prescribing them for those conditions. Researchers in Boston found that prescription rates over the last decade have remained high. One doctor's group says that it's often easier to give in to patients' demands and prescribe them an antibiotic than to explain why they don't work for some illnesses. Art About War is an exhibit that opens tomorrow featuring artwork by military veterans. One art object is a piece of shrapnel that was extracted from the body of a soldier injured in an attack in Iraq. The doctors gave it to Philip Schladweiler, who treated IT not as a combat souvenir, but as art and a way to heal himself.
Knowing that I'm using something that's so destructive and so deadly and oftentimes seen as nothing but destruction, as a piece of art that people can relate to, veterans can relate to. And, you know, it gives people a chance to communicate their issues.
His work is part of a visual art exhibit by United States Veterans Artists Alliance at the Sheraton Four Points near LAX tomorrow. The project is part of an exhibit featuring work from seven veterans. Psychiatrist Judith Broder works with servicemen and women. Here she is.
What was very powerful was the enormity of their psychological scars and injuries. And as a psychiatrist, I felt as if I needed to do something to help them find a way back to themselves.
Dr. Broder is the founder of The Soldiers Project, a nonprofit that provides free confidential counseling services for veteran servicemen and their families. Sunday marks the eighth installment of Ciclavia. Hundreds of thousands of Angelenos will ditch their cars and take to the streets on bikes, boards, and feet. Matthew Tinoco has a preview.
If you're in downtown this Sunday, you'll likely hear an awful lot of this. For those who don't know, Ciclavia is what happens when a major LA street is closed to car traffic and opened exclusively to pedestrians, cyclists, skaters, and runners. The last event, in June, attracted more than 100,000 people to an entirely car-free Wilshire Boulevard. This time, Ciclavia heads to the heart of LA, closing down not one, but nine streets in and around downtown. The route runs from Boyle Heights to Westlake, and from Chinatown, south through the Arts District. Eric Bruins is the planning and policy director for the Los Angeles County Bicycle Coalition. He thinks Ciclavia is popularizing cycling in Los Angeles.
Yeah, so Ciclavia provides a safe place to ride. For a lot of people that don't feel comfortable riding with traffic, just gives people an excuse to take the bike out of the garage, dust off the cobwebs, pump up the tires, and take it out for a spin. But it also shows how small our city really is. Same thing, downtown to the beach. That's the first time that so many of those people ever even thought that was possible.
But it is possible. Thousands of participants rode their bikes from downtown to Venice in April during Ciclavia to the Sea. Ciclavia is not a wheels-only event, though. In an effort to be more inclusive of those who prefer foot traffic, this Ciclavia will include a large pedestrian-only zone centering around the Grand Park Hub on Bunker Hill. LA may never be a permanently car-free city, but Ciclavia offers a unique view of our city from the saddle of a bicycle or on foot, with hundreds of thousands of other Angelenos around you, a definitively special experience that you can't get from behind a windshield.
The first time that I rode on Spring Street during the Ciclavia, I saw probably like 10 times as many murals as I had ever noticed before, just because you don't get a chance to see that if you're in a car, if you are worrying about traffic.
You can get more information about getting to and participating at the event's website, ciclavia.org. Matthew Tinoco, Annenberg Radio News.
Tonight, the Dodgers play the Braves in Atlanta in Game 1 of their best-of-five divisional series. This marks the Dodgers' first playoff appearance since 2009. Earlier today, I talked to Joe Skyward of the Shortstop Bar near Dodger Stadium. We began by discussing how the Dodgers' success affects Southern California.
You know, anytime there's a thriving, successful team or any sort of scene in any sort of area, it's really, really good for that said area. You know, it's like, you know, I'm a Cleveland fan, and, you know, which is kind of rough. And, you know, I guarantee you I'm from Ohio, you know, and I'm actually from Pennsylvania, too. And I know that those areas, when you don't have those super, you know, teams that are in the playoffs every year and in the hunt and this and that, those areas tend to not do so well, you know, just due to the fact that they don't have, you know, strong, you know, support from the fans and stuff like that, because their teams aren't that good. So, you know, when you have a good team and you're thriving, going on, pushing for and into the postseason, it's really, really good for, you know, for the whole area, the whole state is that, as a matter of fact. Because, you know, here, the Giants won the World Series last year. The A's are in the playoffs. The Lakers, it's, you know, California thrives on its sports teams.
Don't bring up the Lakers to me.
Okay, sorry. I'm a Laker hater, dude.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
All right. I want you to put your prognosticator hat on. How do you see the Dodgers doing?
You know, it's, you know, like I said, I've been here 10 years. I've been following this team. I'm an American League guy, but due to the fact that I've been at this bar for 10 years, I have become a pretty staunch Dodger fan. You know, you don't want to hear what I have to say, because pretty much everything that I say or predict in any sort of playoff scenario, and especially teams that make it to the finals and then win said championship, it's always the opposite of what I want and what I predict. But, you know, I can see the Dodgers played really well this year on the road. You know, the Braves have a good pitching staff, but nothing, you know, Medlin's pretty good, you know. But I could see them getting this series, and then depending on who they would, they played well on the road. I could see them winning the series and making it to the NLDS, and then it would depend on who they matched up against. I mean, the Pirates, man, they are really, really good, as are the Cardinals. So I think it's going to be an interesting series. I definitely see them getting out of the first round. But beyond that, I'm just being honest. I don't really know, and it could go either way.
All right. Well, I appreciate you spending time with us. I've been here with Joe Skyward, an assistant manager at the Shortstop Bar. It's on Sunset Boulevard in Echo Park. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome, man. Viva Doyers.
Los Doyers. Thanks. You can catch Game 1 on TBS at 5:30. Clayton Kershaw will be matching up against Chris Medlin. Also tonight, the Buffalo Bills travel to Cleveland to play the Browns. I like the Browns here, as Buffalo is dealing with several injuries on offense, including those to CJ Spiller, Fred Jackson, and Stevie Johnson. But what does that mean for your fantasy team? Well, I'd be hesitant to start Spiller or Johnson, but Fred Jackson should be fine. He's been their most reliable weapon on offense this season. For the Browns, you're starting Josh Gordon and Jordan Cameron, and I also like the Browns' defense this week and going forward. And lastly, if Robert Woods is still available in your league, pick him up. The former Trojan is quickly becoming one of EJ Manuel's favorite targets. Good luck this week, everyone.
Here's come to our attention that a mysterious force is loose somewhere in outer space. The mysteries of creation are there.
Up in the sky?
Up in the sky.
Classical music isn't just for old opera houses or glamorous concert halls. Catherine Davis brings us this story from one Los Angeles group that thinks classical music is best enjoyed over drinks.
Classical music doesn't mean old music, it's living music.
There's this feeling in the classical music world that playing the music as it is powerful enough as an art form. And I don't think that's true. You know, we need to adjust it a little bit to make it something that still speaks to people today.
My name is Sarah Robinson.
And I'm Phil Popham, and we are the co-directors of Classical Revolution Los Angeles.
We are at the Silver Lake Lounge. It's generally a rock and pop and punk venue.
There's a little bitty stage, and it's really intimate and dark.
Our musicians tend to be in their 20s and 30s, so do the audience. People are just, you know, regular people looking for a fun time.
I'm Sebastian Vera, and I play tenor trombone.
I'm Mark Brzezinski. I play tenor trombone.
I'm James Rogers. I play bass trombone.
And I'm William Lang, and I play tenor trombone.
And we are the Goodonian Hands.
When you're in a concert hall, you have to have a reserved and controlled energy. But in a bar, you can really, for me at the very least, just let go a lot more.
In a bar like this, I'm playing very, very extroverted. Because there's you know, much more of an atmosphere that I feel like I need to penetrate.
Classical Revolution brings chamber music into new venues to get new audiences. So we bring it to you in a setting that you're used to, and you don't have to do anything but have a drink and enjoy it.
Nicholas Curiel, also known as Professor Galactico, is releasing his second EP. The first was called Sonic Waves from Beyond. The South Central Los Angeles native talked to Jennifer Velez about his music.
With a fusion of two-tone, ska, reggae, and hip-hop, Professor Galactico is one of the freshest sounds of the ska alternative music scene in Los Angeles. I sat down with him to talk about some of his earliest musical memories and where his latest EP is taking him now.
I'm from the South Central, and the Watts area. I grew up on 68th and Compton. I've been playing music since I was like five. I would always like imagine songs in my head. I used to think that I had a problem, like, why am I always thinking about music? Like, what the hell's going on, you know? The first song that I would sing when I was a kid. Just because I liked it was Vicente Fernandez, Por tu Maldito Amor. That's one of the first songs that I was like, man. And that's what kind of like triggered me to like want to follow in an artistic footstep, you know, like doing something that's gonna make someone's life relevant. You know, there's a lot of music that spreads like pretty whack messages that you're like, ah, oh, for reals? Why are you guys singing about this still, you know? Why are you guys still about the lavish craziness? It's like, come on.
Professor Galactico has 3 upcoming shows, October 6th, October 15th, and November 9th. Tickets are on sale at groovetickets.com.
I have new songs that I've written already for my upcoming EP, Pit Stop at the Moon. These new songs, they're more inspired by like Motown, like the Sublime era. And they're more inspired by the modern R&B that's going on right now to spread the inspiration out to other people, you know, spreading the vibes, the good vibes, and the overall hope.
Jennifer Velez, Annenberg Radio News.
Exposition Park's Rose Garden has been featured in many a Hollywood film. And as Victor Figueroa reports, the park's 85-year-old fountain just got a makeover.
9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
All right.
A small group gathered today in Exposition Park's Rose Garden to rededicate the garden's central fountain. Workers installed new waterproofing and installed pipes and nozzles. They also put in underground lighting and replaced the concrete seating that surrounds the fountain. Expo Park Executive Director Belinda Jackson says she hopes to bring additional public programming to the park.
Latinos, African Americans, you've got the USC students, you've got a lot of talent there. So I think it would be a wonderful venue. And then when you look at the master plan for the park, and look at the university plan, their master plan for University Village, it makes sense for us to really up the ante for programming here in the garden.
The refurbishment for the fountain costs more than $398,000, and Jackson hopes to see more funding for other renovations in Expedition Park. Victor Figueroa, Annenberg Radio News.
In celebrity news, the British Columbia coroner has confirmed that Glee star Corey Monteith died from a heroin overdose while also under the influence of alcohol. 31-year-old Monteith had been dealing with addiction issues since his teen years and had been in rehab twice. This report comes 3 months after the star was found dead in his hotel room. And now we're going to check in with the lovely Rachel Scott to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Hey, coming up on ATVN, we'll have more details on the government shutdown and how it's hitting close to home for some USC students. And more details on how a local rehab center is helping recovering addicts get back on track. We're going to have all those stories and more tonight on ATVN at 6 p.m.
It turns out actress Jennifer Garner has stage fright. She turned to an unlikely coach for advice recently, her daughter Violet. Garner got butterflies while giving a speech at a recent Save the Children benefit. Violet, her daughter, lovingly told her mother to imagine that the crowd was their family dogs named Martha Stewart and Gandhi. During the speech, Garner told the crowd that Violet's advice worked, and then she thanked her daughter. All right, that's it for this Thursday. We had help from Allison Brett, Jacob Ellenhorn, Julian De Ocampa, Selena Say Reynolds, and Ashley Wong. Graham Clark produces our arts and culture segment, and the newscast producer is the one and only Jerome Campbell. Our executive producer is the great Catherine Davis, and for all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Ryan Bouzion. Stay classy, LA. We'll be right back.
Thank you.